Hi, this is JJ, the Practical Alchemist. Here at UK Health Radio, we're hugely saddened by the loss at New Year of my co-presenter, Dr. Mark Goulston. But we hope that you'll appreciate the chance to hear once again one of our Hurt Less, Live More shows in honour of a special friend. Here it is now. Hello and welcome to Hurt Less, Live More, the show where we examine all sorts of hurts that we all experience at some time in our life and also look at ways that we can get through them, what causes those hurts. And I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist. I'm with Dr. Mark Goulston as ever. And here today with us is a very special guest, Jason Reed. And Mark, Jason's a good friend of yours, and maybe you can introduce Jason to our listeners.
Well, he's more than a good friend. He's like a brother, and he matters a lot to me. And I think it's a little bit mutual. Mm-hmm. We came together because tragically and sadly, he lost his son, Ryan, to suicide probably over 5 years ago. And he missed a lot of the signs, you know. And originally, I was part of a documentary called Tell My Story, because that was what Ryan had said on one of his notes that Jason found. And then, and Jason's, you know, this is going to be a part of his life and trying to help others to recognize those signs. And he also recognized in Tell My Story, which is, I think it's on Netflix or Amazon Prime. And, but what he noticed was that was, and it's a great documentary and he put a lot of dough into it. but what he noticed is that when the teens who were alive, who were talking about their downtimes talked, it was really the most riveting. It wasn't experts like me or even parents. So he created another video called What I Wish My Parents Knew. And we've been involved in that together. And so I'm so glad to have him on, because he's an amazing entrepreneur and it's tough for me to pin him down.
Well, just Jason, it is fantastic to have you on the show. And may I say, I was in tears when I watched that video, What I Wish My Parents Knew, absolutely in tears. It was so powerful. Thank you for making it.
Well, JJ, thank you. And Mark, my friend, my life is better because you're in it. So thank you very much.
Share with our listeners and viewers kind of this journey, which I'm very well aware of, and I'm proud to be a little bit of a part of it. But tell them a little bit about your story.
Yeah, so, you know, it was 5 years ago, March, so it's coming up on 6 years, and my wife and I were traveling, celebrating her birthday, and we got a text from Ryan saying goodbye. And he took his life that night. People tried to help him, but it was too late. He spent 5 days in the hospital. Like, he was already gone, but they tried to give us a little hope, but there really wasn't any. So he was 14. He had actually just turned 14 2 weeks before. And that's, I mean, I can't say it enough that, you know, you think your life is on one trajectory and everything's going in a certain direction and everything can change. Everything can change. And we see that a lot in the world today. But that was my example of everything changing. I always thought that I had a great relationship with Ryan. Ryan and his text messages and comments and letters, you know, the little bit he did give us, he said that. You know, I work a lot. I own business across the United States. But when I'm home, I'm home. I'm home with my family. I'm not the guy who goes out with my buddies to the bar. I don't go out golfing with weekends with my buddies. I don't, my wife and I don't go out with people on the weekends and leave our kids. We spend time with our kids. But even that, I missed the signs when it came to Ryan. And Ryan did a really good job of hiding those signs. And he made a comment, you know, when he was writing about it, saying, I didn't want anybody to know. And unfortunately, that's the challenge we have today, is that everybody thinks, or a lot of people think, that the child you have to be worried about is the child who's quiet, sitting in the corner, and doesn't talk to anybody. That's just not the case. It's not true. And I'd like to move the conversation away from Ryan's death, if we may, because the chance of your child dying of suicide, although it could happen, is not a large chance. And that's when we start talking about suicide, it scares people. And they shut down and they go, well, that's not going to be me. I don't even think about that. And you're probably right. Probably chance of it happening to you is slim. But here's the reality, at least, and I'm not sure what the numbers are in the UK, but I think they're pretty much growing across the world. It's not a US problem. But in the US, for example, 40% of the kids last year were stated they had massive, large depression, anxiety issues. That was up from 38% the year before, 34% the year before that. It's on a trajectory that's been going up ever since the start of social media. And it's not all social media's fault, but that definitely hasn't helped. So even if you're not worried about something really terrible happening to your child, the chance that they're having some kind of experience of depression, anxiety is real these days. The chance that you or your spouse or your friends or the people you work with are experiencing some kind of serious depression, anxiety issues is real. And we candidly don't talk enough about it. Most of us don't understand it. And we are afraid of it. And we really don't know what to do about it. And that's where I've come in to try and help in my own little way. My own little way is, you know, trying to help educate parents on how to talk to their teens, what to look for, what the signs are, and a lot of it is what not to do. Because a lot of us, you know, our natural reaction to try and protect our kids is sometimes wrong.
Say more about that natural reaction.
Yeah.
So here's a great example, because it happens all the time, right? Your child walks in, maybe they're 13 or 14 or 15 years of age, and they say, I broke up with my boyfriend or girlfriend, and my life is over. And our natural reaction is to want to protect them and tell them that, no, you don't understand. That person is a terrible human being because they don't see how amazing you actually are. And they're so wrong. And you're the most amazing person on the planet, and they don't get it, and they don't deserve you. And then we'll go into, and there's plenty of other people out there. You're just 13 or 14. You're going to go through 100 people like that before you ever find someone you're going to marry. And you can't think of it that way. And we go off and off and off and try to protect them, to make them feel better about themselves. Because that's logically what we think we should do. The reality is, in some cases, we call it 90% of the time, maybe you're right. That's the right reaction. They're going to go, oh, yeah, you're right, Dad. You're right, Mom. I am so much better. Yeah, I don't know why I was looking that way. But for that percentage of kids who are actually seriously depressed about that issue, that's not going to resonate with them. Because you're trying to apply logic to an illogical situation. And depression is an illogical situation. There's nothing, you can't fix depression with logic. Someone who's feeling depressed doesn't understand what you're saying. They can't see it that way. I came up with an analogy a few years back because I've never experienced depression. I've definitely experienced sadness after Ryan, a lot of sadness, but never, I don't know what depression feels like. So, I mean, how do I describe depression to people who have never experienced it? And I came up with this idea, you know, I live in Southern California. I'm looking outside right now, and there's not a cloud in the sky. nice blue sunny day. Sorry for all of you guys in Scotland, England, but it's a nice sunny day.
Very sunny here. Very sunny here, Jason, most of the time, I have to tell you.
Good. Well, and there's not a cloud in the sky. But if I was here with somebody who's depressed and they're looking out that window, they may only see clouds. And there's not a thing I can say to convince them those clouds don't exist. I can look here and go, look, look right there. There's not a cloud. They'll see, no, I see clouds. So, and the more I try to convince them those clouds don't exist, the more they're going to hunker down into themselves and not want to talk to me. The only thing I can do is say, tell me about your clouds. How do they make you feel? Are they everywhere? Are they somewhere? Do they come and go? What makes them come in? What makes them leave? Are there good clouds and bad clouds? Get them talking about their clouds so they feel comfortable talking to me. If I try to convince them that what they believe in their mind is wrong, they will shut down and not talk to me. And the minute they try to, the minute they shut down and stop talking to me, I have lost. You have lost.
Yeah, and the numbers here in the UK are on the rise as well, and especially amongst men, and especially since the lockdowns, when people were isolated from family and loved ones, and people haven't got over that yet, if they ever will. So the numbers are increasing, I think, everywhere. It is an issue. And you say that you have never suffered from depression. Mm-hmm. I have. And I don't think I can really explain what it is either. And it's not even something that's going on in your head. It's a sort of whole body thing. Mm-hmm. It's a whole body experience. So even rationalizing it and talking about it at some points would never have worked, even then, for me. It's a really tricky thing to get your head around, or to get, you know, for other people to understand. And it is, you know, like you say, it's all too easy to come in with the sort of, oh, yeah, you'll be okay. Oh, you're fine. Oh, you know, but this is just a phase, or, you know, you'll get out of it. Look, you've got all this to look forward to. It doesn't get you out of that whole physical place that you're in, as well as the mental. It's a really deep thing. And Mark and I have talked about this before on the show. I've talked about it before, how I did get to the point where I did consider ending it all at one point. And I don't quite know how I dug myself out of it, but I refer to it as the time where I walked down the steps into hell, but before I actually, you know, lost myself, I was able to climb back up again. And that may be because I actually didn't have the courage, or maybe there was something in me that just thought, no, you can't do that. You know, I didn't have loads of pills lying around because I'm, you know, I don't do pills of any kind. I didn't have razor blades. I, you know, I didn't really have the means by which to end my own life in a way that would be, that I could, you know, that I could contemplate. You know, throw yourself into the Thames. I don't know. It's not, yeah. I'm scared of heights. I don't know if I'd be able to jump off a bridge. People might listen to this and think and laugh and think, well, that's, you know, that's silly. But these were the things that were going through your head. Mm-hmm. And I say the Thames because I was living in London at the time. And so it is a very tricky thing to deal with, especially if you are like me, saying to everybody around you that everything's fine. That's the other thing. So it's very easy to miss the signs, because very often somebody who is depressed, who's feeling suicidal, who's feeling that they can't go on, will be standing there telling you a barefaced lie. I'm okay. Yeah, everything's okay. Because they can't even, they don't feel that they can talk about it. Mm-hmm. It's really Now, we're going to have to go for a break just now, but I'd love to explore with you how you interact with somebody who's feeling depressed, who's having these thoughts. How would a parent approach this if they do suspect and see some of the signs, and what are those signs? But let's come back to that in a moment. First, let's just take a few minutes to listen to these messages from our station sponsors, and we'll be back right after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Stop suffering with pet-related allergies when near dogs and cats. Great news, you can feel safe around pets with Nasal Guard for pet lovers. Nasal Guard topical gel blocks pet dander, hair, and dust mites from entering your nasal passages. Try Nasal Guard for pet lovers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Hurt Less, Live More here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. With me, JJ, the practical alchemist, Dr. Mark Goulston, and our very special guest today, Jason Reed. So, Jason, you know, before the break, I was talking about how does somebody get into that frame of mind or create the space, the safe space, where somebody who's feeling suicidal, a young person who's feeling suicidal or depressed, can actually open up about it?
Well, before I answer that, I'm sure I want to make sure everybody understands I am not a psychiatrist, I am not a psychologist, I am not a therapist. I'm not licensed in any way to have this conversation from a doctor standpoint. I am a dad who lost his son, who has spent a bunch of years trying to understand and talking to a lot of very smart people about this. So everything I had to say is from my experience and my learning. I think we should ask Dr. Mark first what he how he'd answer that question, and I can fill in my ideas because he is the expert.
Okay, so Mark, let's hear from the expert.
One of the ironies of being depressed is it's when you most need to connect emotionally with others, and then you push them away. And one of the reasons you push them away is you often have little confidence that speaking with them will make you feel better, because they will either reassure you, and it's all good intentions. They'll reassure you, they'll give you advice, they'll give you solutions, and inwardly you'll say to yourself, why did I even bother? And so as someone who's somewhat of an expert in this field and spent my career in it, I think one of the ways, and you can do this as a check-in with your kids, especially if you get a sense that they're stressed or if they're angry about something. And one of the ways you can do that is when you're speaking to them, you can say, I don't think you're in a good place. Why don't you tell me about it? Well, no, I'm fine. I'm not so sure of that. And what's going on? What's going on that's, getting to you? Anything from any direction, including me as your mom or dad. And then you need to be open to just letting them speak. And then what you keep doing is you say to them, say a little bit more about that. Or another prompt is, I think you're holding back. Because what you really want to do is drain an abscess, not suture it prematurely before it drains. And if you know, now I know this as a therapist, that if I can go in, and now I can deal with it because I'm a therapist in this particular area. But what you're hoping to do is help let them cry, not make them cry, but let them cry. It's an abscess that needs to be drained. And those tears of being alone and all this pain, that's the pus of depression and suicidality. And a lot of parents would be freaked out. Oh my God, they're crying. And one of the reasons a lot of parents are freaked out about it is because parents don't know how to deal with their own feelings, and they've often dealt with it by compensating or overcompensating, by being busy, by being high achievers, by being whatever. Or they may have had some problems growing up, and they just didn't know that talking about it could help you feel better. And so they found ways to relieve it by coping with it. But if you're prone to depression, is there's a cumulative buildup of all this stuff. And the more that you can notice that as they're talking to you and actually crying with relief, but you have to begin to notice that as they're crying, crying with relief is there, it's the beginning of feeling better because they feel less alone. The problem is that when someone else cries, you think they're in a bad place. It's interesting. I'm probably by far the most in touch with my feelings in my family. And I was recently telling my wife, I said, I'm getting interviewed a lot because I seem to be very calm with facing this medical condition I have. And she says, well, I don't think you're calm. And I said, why? She said, well, you sometimes are weepy. And I said, boy, you don't have a clue. I'm weepy because I'm just allowing myself to feel feelings. Because what someone once told me, I mentioned this on the show before, is that when you can just feel whatever you're feeling, it dissipates in less than 90 seconds. And so, yeah, I'll get weepy. I could get weepy now in a second when I think of the fact that I probably won't see my grandchildren into their teens. And I adore them. And that's probably not going to be an option. But the point is, when you can allow yourself to just feel the feeling, it comes up and out. But the majority of the world, close to 100%. And by the way, Jason, that's why we called the show Hurt Less, Live More, to enable people to air their hurt as opposed to, jumping into their coping mechanism. And we're not against coping, but there's a buildup of this abscess that if it's not drained, there's a cumulative effect of it on most people, even a lot of people who aren't prone to depression. When you push away just feeling anything because you're a doer, you're not a feeler, you can go through life. And, I used to do house calls to dying patients, and I tried to relieve them of a life where they were really, really successful and really, really busy, and they had a lot of really, really regrets. because part of how you get close is by of just being transparent about what you're feeling, which is not the same thing as boo-hoo, boo-hoo, boo-hoo.
So if we take what Mark was talking about and maybe expand on it a little bit, unless you have more, Mark.
No, I'm finished.
All right. What I like to tell parents is you can't try to communicate with your kids the way you would expect to communicate with an adult. And so there's a couple of things you have to keep in mind. Your kids do not want to look you in the eye when they have a conversation with you. They don't want to look you in the eyes at all. You're intimidating, and you can tell me you're not. I'm telling you, you are. They're scared of you. They're really scared of what you're going to think of them. They're worried about what you're going to say. So looking you in the eyes is something they don't want to do. Think about it this way. I grew up Catholic, and I'm sure a lot of you may have grown up Catholic as well. And when you think about, or if you didn't grow up Catholic, I'm sure you've seen on a TV, if we go to a confessional, it's a big box with two doors. The priest is already inside. He's looking for this little cloth thing in between. You can't see the priest's face. I walk in, I sit down in the door next to him, and I'm looking for it. I'm not looking at the priest, and I'm going to tell him my sins. And I'm going to do that without him looking me in the eyes and judging me, because I'm going to feel he's going to judge me. He's going to look me in the eyes. Now, the truth about every small town and in the world is the priest knows exactly who you are when you walk in there. So he knows all your sins. But you feel like you can be honest, hopefully honest. That's why it's designed that way, because you're not looking at them. So I'm not saying build a confessional in your house, but I am saying that think about when you're going to talk to your kids. If you want to walk, if you walk into their room and tell them you have to talk to me now, and you stare at them in the eyes, you've lost again. They're not going to talk to you. You're also intruding on the one little space in their life that they feel is sacred to them. Right? They're in the, I mean, every one of us who has walked into our kids' rooms and got yelled at and cursed at with words they'd never use any other time, it's because we've invaded their own little space. That's all they got. They got that little room. They got that little bed. They got the sheets over their head, and that's all they got. And now you're tearing the sheets off their bed, going, "You have to talk to me." And they're just reacting the way they're like a caged animal backed into a corner. So you got to think about when you're going to talk to them. You know, you take them for a walk. When you're walking, you're looking forward. Do an activity with them that's keeping them busy, and have a conversation with them. Go for a drive in the car. A lot of times you'll find your kids are more open to talking and telling you things on their drive back from school, or their drive to school, or their drive to a sporting event or something you're going to do with them. Because you know why? Because they know you can't take your eyes off the road and stare at them. You have to look forward. And so they're more open to take a chance and have that conversation than they would be if you walked into their room. The big thing is you don't want to judge. As much as you're going to want to judge, and you don't want to fix as much as you're going to want to fix. If you really want your kids to open up and talk to you, you've got to change the way your perspective of a parenting camp, where it came from. Yes, I'm 56. I grew up in a world where if your parents find out, you get in trouble, your dad grabs the belt, you're grounded, whatever the hell happens, right? And you get lectured to for hours and hours and hours about how you shouldn't have done that stupid thing. And for whatever reason, we all turned out okay. Or a lot of us did. I'm not sure why. I can't tell you why. But we all, for a lot of us, turned out okay. My generation did not have the challenges this generation had. But I can also tell you why. And I want you to give you a little perspective as to why I think it is this way. When I was 13 and the phone rang, it was attached to the wall, and my father answered it. He would then stand there, decide if I was allowed to speak on the phone or not, for how long, and while I was having a conversation, he'd stand over me until I said, "Yeah, I'll see you at school tomorrow. I'll see ya." There was no phone like, you know, this thing that's attached to every one of our kids and every one of us. I mean, we all know this, right? But I'm going, maybe that's why our world was different. Maybe that's why we didn't have those kind of issues. We didn't watch the news. Why would I watch the news? I was 13. Was there stuff going on, you know, 43 years ago? Yeah, I'm sure there was. I haven't bothered even to look back at what it was. There was a whole bunch of drama in the world already. It was, but I didn't look at it. Why the hell would I? I was a kid. Now you take a look at kids today, and JJ started with, you know, all these kids that went through the lockdowns and COVID. Yeah. That, they had the same little brains that I did when I was 13, when all I cared about was going out to look for where I'm going to build a fort for the weekend. And they're worried about COVID. And what are they worried about now? They've been worried about, you know, nuclear war in Europe with Russia and the Ukraine. They're worried about whether that's going to come back and hit them in the UK and the rest of Europe, if NATO's going to have to get involved. Now they're worried about what's happening with Israel and Palestine and whether we're going to have a war there and whether they're going to be involved. And then a smattering of other, you know, is COVID coming back or not coming back? And my God, it's enough for all of us as adults to try and sort through that stuff. And now they have to sort through it. And then they get a notification on their phone that their best friend is out with somebody they didn't think they talked to and they weren't invited, because it's all over Instagram. There's no secret as to why we are the mess we are. Our kids are inundated with too much information about the world. And they can't, it's hard for us as adults. We're trying to, should I be worried about the Middle East? Should I not be worried about the Middle East? Should I be worried about Ukraine? Should I be worried? I mean, the next election, the this, that, the other thing. Who just got elected in Argentina? That guy seemed a little weird. I mean, how did that happen? Like, as adults, we can't process it. As kids, they really can't process. So then all that's going on and their boyfriend breaks up with them. And why bother?
Yeah, there's certainly a lot more going on right now than there used to be when even I was I'm a bit older than you, but you know, when I was a kid, we just used to go out and play.
Yeah.
And have fun and take the dog for a walk or, you know, do something, but mostly outside. We weren't watching the news and we didn't have phones. I mean, heavens. You know, I'm old enough that I still remember when I first worked in journalism, we had typewriters with bits of paper and you couldn't just backtrack and, you know, delete things and change things as you do on the computer. I mean, it was such a simpler time. There was still, though, depression in those days. It is a lot more prevalent today. I think, yeah, I agree, partly because of everything that you talk about there. Yeah. It's a very different age. I don't know how we deal with it, but maybe we can look at that more. We've talked a bit, Mark, about how we can talk to our children, but maybe we can go a little bit deeper into that when we come back after this break. We'll be back right after this.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the The station that makes you feel good.
And you're still listening to Hurt Less, Live More with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, Dr. Mark Goulston, and our guest today, Jason Reed. And Mark, we were talking before the break about all the different pressures on kids, not even pressures, it's all the processing that they have to do to take on board all the information that they're bombarded with. And it probably leaves quite the impression on their psyches. How do you deal with that?
Well, you know, I feel like I'm sometimes fighting a lone battle. I think one of the reasons that kids don't open up to us is they have little confidence that talking with us or talking to us will make them feel better. And so in their mind, better to not talk about it when I'm only going to feel worse. Either it's going to be minimized, either I'm going to be reassured and that won't help, either or I'm going to be given advice, or maybe they'll even shame me. And one of the things that they need confidence in is that they can talk something up and out until their feelings come up and out. Because when you can talk something up and out and the other person just gives you the space to do that, it starts to unpack it for you. There's a 30-something young man that I'm working with, and I believe people experience me as always inviting them to just keep talking until they talk about what they need to talk about. And most people experience me as not controlling or judgmental. And it was interesting because it looked like, you know, we were running out of issues. And he said, you know, Dr. Goulston, that's what he calls me. He says, I've never felt this safe in a conversation with another human being. You know, I mean, you're not judgmental. You seem to have this unwavering positive view of me. And he looked at me and he said, you know, I got a lot of hangups. And I said, have at it. And he's bringing up stuff he's never told anybody. And as I'm watching him, I can just see the relief. But I can understand this is unusual, and I can understand it's because I'm bringing my training into it. But I think one of the reasons people don't look other people in the eye, even their spouses, is they have little confidence that the conversation will make them feel better. Whereas if the other person has the insight that the more I get them to talk about what's really going on, and not rush in with a solution and not be judgmental, and then they start to cry with relief, they're going to feel better. You know, and then even then you don't give them suggestions. And sometimes they'll say, well, maybe we should talk about what to do about it. I said, well, I don't want to rush you, but we could. But have it come from them. But I'm just fighting an uphill battle, and I'll keep fighting it as long as I live.
Well, it is really important to give that safe space where people can open up. And that sometimes takes time as well, doesn't it?
Always takes time.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that from the kids I've interviewed over the years, you know, the one thing that's consistent is that when I ask them, like, so do you want your parents to stop? They keep asking, you keep saying, no, I'm not going to talk to you. No, I'm not going to say anything. Do you want them to stop? And they're like, no, I'm just not ready to talk yet. But I don't want them to stop. Because when you stop, it signals that you don't care.
Yeah.
So they might yell at you and scream at you and tell you to go away, but they don't want you to stop. They may want you to figure out a different way to say it, but they don't want you to stop.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do come back to, again, though, this question of there being a safe space to speak and to really open up. I mean, for me, that would have been key. Mm-hmm. It would have been to have a safe space to talk, somewhere where I knew that there wouldn't be any reprisals, any, you know, you have to, I think, display that non-judgment that Mark's talking about and model that so that the person that you're wanting to open up can open up. I'm just thinking back to my childhood and my parents. Mm-hmm. There was no way that I would have opened up unless they had been able to model an ability to create a non-judgmental safe space for me to do so. But, you know, they were of a completely different generation where that kind of thing just didn't happen. So, you know, it's...
I want to give you guys, I think I've shared this with you, Jason. Look, I've developed a bunch of approaches to help parents get their kids to open up. And one of the most effective one is to use reverse psychology. And one of the ways to do that is, like you said, Jason, they don't want you to go away because it shows you don't care. But one of the ways to use reverse psychology, and this can come from a mom or a dad, sometimes they're more willing to talk to a mom because, you know, I don't know, they just... Dads are often really not the best communicators, but the reverse psychology approach would be to say to your kid, I want to try something. I think that maybe it'll make you feel better. So, you know, just play along, you know, just play along with, if you don't like it, throw it away. I want you to look at me and say, Dad, will you stop with this talking already? Every time we have a conversation, I only feel worse. You just don't get it. You know, why don't you go take a course in how to be a parent? Can you just get off my back with we should talk? So, honey, could you say that? And what happens is they say it, and then you say, you're pulling your punches. Come on, come on. And what happens is they start to giggle. Because you're giving them, it's called mediated catharsis. You're giving them the words that if they were to say that, you'd say, well, you need to show some respect. But because you're putting a syringe into, it's called surgical empathy. And when you give them the words to say it, you're not going to send them to their room because you're the one facilitating it. And I'm telling you, the more you give them the words, sometimes the expletives about doing their homework, you know, this is moms love this. Can you say this to me, honey? Get off my back with the effing homework already. Every time you come here, it makes it worse. And I'm just going to do video games or porn. So can you get a clue, mom? So, honey, could you say that like you feel it? But you follow what I'm saying? It's a way of facilitating getting stuff up and out that they would never say. But they start to giggle, and because they just feel free. So there's different ways to open people up. But yeah,
I think that's a brilliant one. I think it's a really good one. Yeah, if parents can do that with their kids,
you also have to give some kind of free pass to a point. It's like you think about it: if they're really in a rough spot and they've been contemplating taking their life, they're afraid to tell you.
Yeah.
If they've been cutting, they're afraid to tell you. If they've been abusing alcohol and drugs, they're afraid to tell you. If they become sexually promiscuous because that's what their advice is, they're afraid to tell you. If they ran out at night and snuck out of the house and did some bad things, they're afraid to tell you. So they have to have some kind of belief that sharing those things is not going to let them they're not going to get in trouble this time. And they need to understand that they can tell you these things and they'll get a pass this time.
Jason, do you think it would help? Because one of the things I know in your Goalcast video that had, I think, more than 10 million views, is you ask these male entrepreneurs, you know, did you ever, you know, talk about negative things? Did you ever open up? And they raised their hands and said, no, none of us. I'm wondering if one of the things we can model to our teens is to say, now you might not be able to say this, Jason, because you haven't felt depression. I have felt depression. It's probably why I became a psychiatrist. I'm still waiting for that to help me. But I think if we were to say, I have felt a number of the things you felt, and I never told my parents, and it was a mistake not to.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have helped me.
Yeah, and you know, and I'm not forcing you to do it. I'm just telling you, you know, when you see me getting moody and I'm pent up, it's probably because I didn't talk to my parents, because I didn't open up to them, and they didn't know how to talk to me, and I didn't know how to talk to them. But we both should have tried harder, and I don't want that to happen to you when you're feeling this way. And I'm not forcing it out of you. I'm just telling you that if I had to do over again, I would have made an attempt to be able to just talk to my parents about it, even when I didn't know what to say.
So I think vulnerability is a big thing that I missed. I showed up as a dad because I thought that's how I was supposed to show up, as somebody who's got his act together, never cried, never be a problem. I was an Iron Man, a black belt, multiple businesses, blah, 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 blah. Never had a problem. Never, no one ever saw me cry. No one ever saw me worried. Behind the scenes, you know, I'd failed at a whole bunch of businesses. I almost lost the house a couple of times. My wife, my kids never knew. I just don't share that stuff with them. I thought my job was to keep them safe. So I never talked about being bullied as a kid. I never talked about a lot of that stuff. So I wish I was more vulnerable with my family when I was younger. I'm a lot more vulnerable now. I'm not saying run home and tell your kids you're going to lose your job tomorrow. But having a conversation to start something like, you know, I had a rough day because there's this bully in the office. And here's what he's doing. That's bugging me.
Yeah.
Allowing your kids a chance to talk about that with you.
I think that's really powerful as well. Yeah, it's that vulnerability. And I think, you know, I absolutely felt what you're saying about you felt you had to show up in a certain way because we were all taught how parents should be. Again, you know, that's what was modeled to us, probably, you know, when we were younger. But it's time to break the mold. And, you know, I'm really sad to say that we're coming to the end of this show now. And I want to make sure that people know where they can find out more about the work that you do, Jason, and also where people can see the films, the movies that you've made and that sort of thing. So can you tell us where people can find out some more about your work?
Yeah, sure. If you go to tellmystory.org, tellmystory.org, you can find my TEDx talks, my Goalcast. The movie Tell My Story is up on Amazon. It is on most streaming platforms now at this point. And the movie What I Wish My Parents Knew is a school program we put into schools. Right now it's been across the US. It was our first year with it, but it's 45 minutes of a school program where we have parents come in an audience. They listen to kids for a half hour talk about how they feel, how they felt. Ideally, here you're going to resonate with one of those kids and go, wow, that could be my child. And I speak for about 15 minutes about some of the same stuff we just spoke about today, a little bit more. And then we have a mental health professional come in to talk about what you heard and facilitate a conversation. The reason why we do it that way, as opposed to just putting this film up on YouTube, is because it's meant to be a conversation. It's not meant to be something you watch by yourself. And it's available that we can put it into schools across Europe. Love to. And if you go to the contact us section of the website, you can reach myself and my team and we can have a conversation of how we get that into schools in Europe. I would love to have more and more people understand this. I think this is, you know, we said to be in, this is not just a problem in the United States. It's a problem everywhere.
Absolutely. It definitely is a problem everywhere. And so people can contact you through that website, can they?
Yep.
That's fantastic.
If you fill out the contact us section, My team will find me. It's a small team. They know where to find me.
Brilliant. That's fantastic. Mark, we're coming to the end. Any final thoughts? It's lovely to have Jason on, wasn't it, today, and talk about this. It's such an important subject.
No, it was more than lovely. And if you have a chance to listen to this, share it with your family, share it with your schools. Do go to the website. Is it tellmystory.org?
Tellmystory.org.
Yeah, and please help Jason, help all of us to, you know, help our kids who have all this mental health issues and they're in it alone.
Yeah.
You know, we're not here to scare you away because of suicide, but they're suffering. And I think this could really be a catalyst that you can use in your community to address it. And the conversations will come spontaneously from this film.
Yes. So please do share it. And on that note, thank you for listening to this today. We're really grateful for your company today. I'm very grateful, or as ever, for you, Mark, Dr. Mark Goulston. And thank you so much, Jason Reed, for joining us today. Until next time with another very special guest, goodbye for now from me and Mark and Jason Reed.
Thank you very much.